welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm Jace.
I'm Jaden.
And Manny will be joining us in a little bit. This episode, we're going to be talking real quick about some comic, movie, and TV news. And then we're going to give our thoughts on some issues of Rebirth that are going to come out Wednesday, June 8th, which will be the same day this episode is released. So before you get down to your comic shop, or if you plan on putting it off, this will give you an idea. The DC Rebirth 80-page giant itself has been selling out like crazy. They scheduled a second printing, and then before they could even get the second printing done, they had a third printing. So I know there was quite a few conventions in different parts of the country this last weekend. Phoenix Comic Con here in Phoenix, Awesome Con in DC. There was another one in upstate New York. There was Dallas Fan Expo. And I think there may have been one down in Florida somewhere, too. But anyway, everywhere this comic has been selling out like crazy. Saw some photos and a Bleeding Cool article about one dealer selling it for, I believe, like $5, $5.99 or $6.99, $4.99. No, $5.99. That's what it was. It was $5.99 or 2 for $10. And he brought two cases, which was 440 books, apparently. And because he had both covers, the Midnight exclusive cover and the regular cover. So 440 books total, 220 of each cover, and they sold them all. And so, you know, some people, when their original picture went up, they were complaining, I sell them for over cover price. This book's only been out a couple days. Ridiculous. And then there was another photo that showed up later of a dealer had the DC Rebirth 80-page giant on his wall book for $14 already. So clearly a lot of people wanted it. You know, it was a big event. DC hyped the heck out of it. You would think that, you know, dealers and what have you, retailers and fans would have pre-ordered, but apparently it's in high demand. So there's a couple more printings coming. So one of the printings is going to be a $5.99 because DC's going to square binding on it and put a thicker cover on there. That'll be nice. So anyway, I hope you got your copy. And now that that's come out and we see the changes in the DC universe, these Rebirth titles are starting to roll out, and we're going to talk about five of them that are going to be coming out this Wednesday. So, but before we get into that,
we're sitting on top of the story of the century here.
Let's talk a little bit about a couple of comic news items. So we know that Greg Capullo announced he was leaving his partnership with Scott Snyder on Batman quite a while ago to go work on this project with Mark Miller. And then shortly thereafter, we found out Scott Snyder was leaving as well. And then it didn't really matter because DC was, you know, rebirthing their books anyway. But that series that Capullo had left Batman for has finally been announced. So there's a link in the show notes to an article on Comic Book Resources. And it's not Rebirth, but Reborn is the name of the series. So it follows 80-year-old Bonnie Black on her adventures in the next life. So the official series description is as follows. It's not heaven, it's not hell. It's as real and as hard as where we live now, but filled with the most amazing fantasy landscapes, jaw-dropping creatures, and a battle raging between good and evil. The people she loved are in this world, her father and her childhood dog, but oddly, not her husband, who had passed over 14 years before. So she sets out to find him. She realizes that she's been reborn as a 25-year-old woman with a sword in her hand and a gun on her hip. And there's a, in the article, there's a picture of the cover, Reborn cover by Greg Capullo. It looks really cool. Kind of a post-apocalyptic landscape. This cityscape, spires of some fantasy-looking city in the background. Looks like some lightning coming from the sky. Looks really cool. I'm always a big fan of the genre of kind of mixing barbarian sword fighting kind of thing with like science and technology and laser guns and such. So it looks like this might be somewhere along the lines of that. Since it's a Mark Miller project, of course, it's already been optioned as a movie. So, Greg Capullo art, yeah, I'm in. Mark Miller writing it. Mark Miller story, yeah, I'm in for sure. So, it looks really cool. It's supposed to hit stores in October, so we'll keep our eyes out for that. Did you see the image, Jaden?
Yeah, I looked at it and I looked over the article. It looks cool. I think it'll probably be pretty interesting considering how good of a writer Mark Millar is. And I think it's going to be something I'm going to have to hear about, though. It sounds very like generic, and just the description of it.
Yeah, maybe you want to learn more before you commit.
Yeah.
All right. Next bit of comic news. Gerard Way's Young Animal imprint's going to launch at North Carolina NC Comic-Con in November. Of course, we know that Gerard Way, former lead singer for My Chemical Romance, he's been given an imprint at Vertigo over at DC Entertainment, and they have four titles that he's going to kind of be overseeing, I guess you'd say. I think he's writing two of them. But they're all going to be part of his imprint, so clearly he's going to have input on all the titles. So look for that in November. Also in some other DC news, and once again, I know the news tends to be DC heavy, and I looked for Marvel news, and there just wasn't any. It's like Marvel, other than the Captain America thing that continues to kind of make headlines about them making Captain America a double agent for Hydra since day one, basically. They're just, I don't know, there just isn't Marvel news out there. They seem to care more about, their cinematic universe and their TV universe than actual comics. So I guess we'll see. But anyway, third item of news, Mitch Gerard, who does the, or Garrod, I think it is. Mitch Garrod's, I think that's how you're supposed to pronounce it. I was just calling him Mitch, so when I talked to him, I interviewed him at Phoenix, actually, and I asked for the pronunciation of his name, and he told me, but I seem to have forgotten. Sorry, Mitch. Anyway, he has signed a DC exclusive, so I think that's good news. His art is very well suited for what he's currently working on, which is the Sheriff of Babylon title at Vertigo with writer Tom King, and if you know about that book, or if you don't, then definitely listen to that interview with Mitch coming up later this week. We talk about the worth of telling that story, and I get into his process a little bit. All right, next bit of news. Green Arrow Rebirth seems to be kind of the surprise hit of the first week of the Rebirth titles. It's sold over 90,000 copies, which I think like the previous couple issues of Green Arrow sold like maybe 18 to 20, maybe. And that's, people knowing that the title's going to end and probably picking up some issues to kind of see how it ends. So this is, more than four times that. I'm not exactly sure what it is about Green Arrow Rebirth that has, I know people are excited about the idea of Green Arrow and Black Canary rekindling their romance. Maybe some people or discovering their romance, whatever, because in the New 52 continuity, they pretty much have no connection. So maybe, I don't know if it's fans of the Arrow TV show learning about this book or what exactly, but it's been very well received, and 90,000 copies. Did you hear any talk about this, Jaden, about how a lot of people were liking it?
No, not really. It took me by surprise, too. I didn't really understand what about it made it sell 90,000 copies. It doesn't seem like there was really... I didn't see anything that really stood out to me as really unique about it. Like,
what about you, Manny? Did you hear anything about it? Because I know you asked me if...
I thought I was going to... I asked you to see if you had a digital copy of it, because I couldn't find a print copy anywhere.
Oh, yeah,
sold around here locally.
Yeah,
That's one of the few I didn't order, because I really didn't think it was going to sell out, number one. And now I want to know kind of why.
What's the hubbub all about?
Yeah, what's going on?
It's going to a second printing, so.
Well, I'm glad it's doing well, because Green Arrow is a great character. And maybe it's a couple of these Arrow TV show fans that are really upset with the show, and to kind of be able to talk about Arrow a little bit more.
you wonder if these Arrow TV fans have tried the book out, you know, here or there, not all at once to where you'd see a big bump in sales, but maybe, you know, they've tried it out here or there and seen that it hasn't matched the book. There's no Black Canary in the Green Arrow book. So, you know, what's the point? It doesn't resemble the TV show or whatever. And so, you know, they kind of dropped it. And then all of a sudden they hear, with in DC Rebirth, there's, of course, the few panels where Green Arrow and Black Canary meet. And, they realize there's something there. There's a shared history that they don't remember. And maybe that sparked enough interest in any of the Arrow fans who picked up the 80-page giant to be like, oh, I got to get DC Rebirth and see what happens. So yeah, it's going to a second printing, and the funny thing is, like I said, the last few issues of Green Arrow's regular titles weren't setting the world on fire. It's the same writer, Ben Oliver. So
yeah,
it's a good thing. And final bit of comic news: if you listen to our Phoenix Comic Con wrap up, you heard my thoughts on the convention, and I thought it was pretty good. It felt, as I said on that episode, it felt better than last year. So it was a good show. Sorry neither one of you guys were able to make it, especially you, Jaden. There was a lot of people, Jaden, asking, where's Jaden? Jaden didn't make it. And I told everybody, you know, he planned on coming, and then he got stuck working. You know, he's an adult now, so he's adulting. And everybody kind of understood that. But you were missed, my friend.
Todd, yeah, it sucks. Yeah, I really wanted to go, but it was just starting a new job.
Yeah, Todd and Don Knox specifically said to give you their best. Also, the Hex Girls said to say hello. So I was saying in the previous episode that, and you know, you were there last year, Jaden, so you could speak to this. Last year, even before the show was over, there just seemed to be maybe halfway through Friday into Saturday and Sunday, kind of this feeling of disappointment in the show from a lot of people, especially in Artist Alley. Would you say that's true?
Yeah.
And, you know, I've said before how last year was the first year they separated people, the loss of foot traffic on the floor kind of, I think, hurt people. But this year it was wildly different. There wasn't that feeling. There was definitely a fun feeling, a fun vibe. A lot of people there. As far as how people did, it was crazy. Take for example, the Hex Girls. They sold out of their trade paperbacks by 11 or 12 on Sunday. They could have sold a lot more than they brought. Because a lot of people, as we know, wait till Sunday to do their shopping, and they were already sold out. And they brought along a certain amount of product based on how they had done last year. Now, so they did well. Now, move three people down was friend of the show, Philip Sebi. And he said he was going to do half of what he did last year, approximately. So there was no rhyme nor reason. I talked to Chad Harden, and they did gangbusters on Thursday, and then Friday was a little bit slower, Saturday was a little bit slower, Sunday was a little bit, and it kind of went on that trajectory. Barry Kitson, on the other hand, was swamped the entire time. So people were really just all over the place. It's hard to say why, really. Like I said, Thursday, everybody was swamped. I've never seen so many people at a preview night. It was like it was Saturday. I mean, it was packed. Okay, you know how when you walk in, Jaden, and if you go to the left, there's the stairs and the escalator. If you go to the right, there's the elevator.
Yeah.
And it's that big lobby, and straight ahead, it's the food court. So we went in there. We went in, and it's not that crowded. It's 3:30, and we go over to the registration, same place it was last year, to get the badges. Your sister's pushing her stroller with all her Supergirls in it. Sam Jones, Flash, that Sam Jones, sees her pushing the stroller with the superhero girls and asks Aspen if he can buy one. Because the line for guests was right next to the line for press. And she looked at him like he was crazy, said no, and like kept walking. It was hilarious. So we got our badges, and then we went, because we had the stroller, we went to get in line for the elevator. That was the longest line I stood in all day. It took like 45 minutes to get downstairs almost. But while I was standing in line for the elevator, that lobby filled up because I think they weren't letting any more people downstairs because the whole downstairs was full of people waiting to get in. Yeah. That whole lobby filled up. Like, if you had wanted to leave, you couldn't leave because it was just, like, packed wall-to-wall people. Like, you couldn't move or get around or whatever until they started letting people downstairs. It was crazy. It was like, that lobby was like Sunday after the San Diego Comic-Con ends. That's how many people, that's how packed the people were. Like, you couldn't move. It was ridiculous. So, I mean, it made for a lot of energy on the floor. And like I said, a lot of people did gangbusters on Thursday. You know, and the show was only open from 4 to 9. But then, it got a little slower as the days went on. So, I talked to a lot of people. Interview with Dan Juergens. My interview with Kurt Busiek was the longest interview. That came out earlier today. Or yesterday, as this is being released. And then, you know, the rest of the interviews will roll out the rest of the week. I talked to Chad Harden. I talked to Barry Kitson. I talked to Phil Hester. I talked to Brian and Christy Miller from Hi-Fi Design. I talked to Paul Scanlon, who is one of the co-founders of Legion M Entertainment, which is like a crowdfunding entertainment. Or not a crowdfunded, but a fan-owned entertainment company, production company that's starting up. I also talked to PJ Harzma and Shannon Eric Denton from Con Man. Shannon invited me to go be an extra for season 2 of Con Man. I have to go to LA July 5th and 6th. So, any of you guys interested in going with me? I talked to them too about maybe being more than just an extra. They said, well, show up and we'll see. So, you know, obviously that would be really cool to have like an actual speaking part. I'm like, yeah I could play the guy, like the podcast guy that keeps bugging you for an interview and won't like leave you alone. Not that, you know, I've done that in real life, at least not to a huge extent. But anyway, did you guys see the page I got from Barry Kitson?
Yeah, I saw it. I didn't really take that good of a look at it.
Yeah, because it's just pencils and the pencils are kind of light. What I need to do is I need to go through my issues of Empire and find the page and send a picture of the page so you can see what it looks like. But did you see the commission I got from him?
Which one was that?
It's the Golgoth, the yellow and red and blue guy.
No, I didn't.
No, I didn't see that either.
Oh, man. I'm going to send it to you guys right now. It's a... It's amazing. So I originally got like a $45 page from him, and then after sleeping on it, I decided I wanted this other page. So that Golgoth page that I ended up getting was $150. But you know, it's a page from the book, and it's a full page splash. So yeah, I'm real happy with it. And then watercolor commission. He was great. I mean, Barry Kitson's one of my favorite artists, so he was really awesome. Saw the guys from Valiant. Andy was there. Talked to Frank Mastromoro from Aspen Comics. I think we're going to have him on the show to talk about the... Have you seen the Michael Turner variant cover for Batman number 1?
No.
Yeah, I thought it's pretty cool.
Yeah, so Frank's going to be on to talk about that. And keeping the memory of Michael Turner alive. So, but yeah, it was a really good show. You know, had some people over here Friday night, eat some grub, and then took. They ate a lot. I'll just put it that way. And I didn't have as many leftovers as I hoped I was going to have. And as it turned out, I didn't have as many leftovers as I needed to give leftovers to all the people that I had said I'll bring you leftovers. like I wasn't able to take any to Jason Metcalf or David Barron. So I felt kind of bad, but everybody was understanding. They're like, no, it's fine. You know, don't worry about it. So, did you guys get the, text, the picture?
Yeah, it's got it. It's pretty sick.
Yeah.
And that's a real classic feel to it.
That's a, it's on like an 11. No, it's not 11 by 17, but it's bigger. It's not 11 by 17, but it's bigger than 8.5 by 11. So it's good size. And that's all. So he pencils it, and then he inks it with a brush, and then he watercolors it. And, I mean, the fine lines he gets with inking with his brush, man. I mean, the steady hand he has, I mean, it's just amazing. And the fact that that's watercolor, I mean, it looks like marker, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he's so good with the watercolor. I tried to do watercolor, it just looked all blobbed out and whatever. But what was funny, though, is I kept going back to him throughout, because I ordered this commission on Thursday night, and I paid for the page I wanted. And the next morning, he was one of my first interviews I had on a Friday, and I went back, and his assistant was there Friday, not there on Thursday, and because the Golgoth page didn't have a price. And I asked Barry, and he said, oh, probably like $300. And then when I got there, the guy had priced it for $150 because it was just pencils. And so then I was like, well, I already paid $45 for this other page, and I paid for this commission, which was $70. And I was like, man, for $105 more, I can have this like full-on splash page. And the thing that's cool about the splash page, it's not just that it's Golgoth, but across the bottom of the page are a bunch of tiny panels that have like headshots of all his lieutenants who are like the main other characters in the story. So it's a splash page with the main character, you know, huge and a great pose, and then all the other characters too. So I was like, I think I changed my mind, if that's okay. And they're like, oh yeah, sure, no problem. And then I kept checking back throughout the weekend to see if he was done with my commission, and he never was. He'd be like, oh, this is how far I got, this is how far I got, this is how far I got. And it wasn't until like, it was like 3:30, 3:45 on Sunday, and it was like done. It was like inked, but the only color was like his shoulder, the blue on his shoulders. And he's like, and he sees me there, and he's like, you know, it's kind of faster if you just wait here. And I didn't have anything else to do at that point, so I was like, yeah, I'll just wait here. Because what would happen is other people would come up and wait, and so he would do their whole thing, and he would get to mine in between. But since he always had people there, he didn't get to it, you know. But yeah, I'm super happy with it, super stoked. So really good convention. Definitely have to come next year, Jaden. I didn't get up to the third floor much. I mean, the con man panel I went to was up on the third floor, but I didn't really walk around on the third floor or whatever. So it was cool though. I did think I was going to get a chance to interview Nolan North, but he had to run, so, because he was on the con man panel too. And I interviewed Shannon Eric Denton and PJ Harzma right after the panel. So, anyway, yeah, great show. There's a ton of people. It was super hot here. People wondering why anybody lives here. But again, they had the convention the last week in May last year, and that was the first weekend it was super hot. This year they moved it back a week, and this is the first weekend it's been super hot. If they would have had it last weekend of May, it was like 85 here. So, go figure.
Nero before Zod.
Let's talk some movie news. So, have either one of you guys watched the latest DC animated?
Which one was it?
It was a Killing Joke.
I didn't even realize that was out yet.
Oh, maybe
it's not out yet, is it?
Oh, maybe it hasn't come out yet.
No, it's supposed to debut at Comic-Con.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Well, the reason I ask is because supposedly in the special features of The Killing Joke is a sneak peek for the next DC animated title, which is Justice League Dark. So
that's cool. I'm curious to see what the DC animated universe Justice League Dark would be.
Yeah, I mean, we've heard rumors at various times about Guillermo del Toro directing a Justice League Dark movie.
Yeah.
So I wonder if they're kind of testing the waters to see if that's viable. Anyway, if you're interested, there's a link in the show notes to an article on Bleeding Cool with a few more details on that. Also in movie news, we see that Thor Ragnarok is set to start filming July 4th. I haven't really kept up too much on the Thor Ragnarok news. I heard something about the Hulk supposed to be in it.
Yeah, him and it's going to be like a buddy cop movie in space. That's what they described it as with Thor and the Hulk.
Huh.
It's going to have elements of the Planet Hulk storyline in it.
And did I see... We talked before about... oh my god, Jeff Goldblum being in it as Grandmaster.
Yeah.
So that makes sense, being that he's one of the like elders of the cosmos or whatever. So... and the final bit of movie news, John Boyega, who played Finn in Star Wars... Oh my god, what's the name? The Force Awakens. he's set to star in the Pacific Rim sequel. Now, hasn't the Pacific Rim sequel been like rumored to start filming or start work production or whatever for a long time?
I honestly thought it's already started.
Yeah, I heard like they were going to do it, then they weren't going to do it, and then like, so I don't know. Anyway, I guess Idris Elba, he's supposed to play Idris Elba's son in the movie, and I don't even really remember Idris Elba being in it, but you know, I've only seen it once.
Now, he was one of the guys that was able to, who piloted one of the Jaegers by himself back in the day.
As opposed to Taken 2?
Yeah, because like, it messed up the original guys, because it was supposed to take two brains for those huge Jaegers.
Alright, fair enough.
I'm interested in this. I like John Boyega. He was good in Star Wars. Just kind of, it makes sense.
Well, I've never seen him in anything but Star Wars, so.
Well, yeah, I've never seen him in anything but Star Wars either, but. I mean, it makes sense that he, after getting stardom like that, he would get a movie like Pacific Rim.
My name is Oliver Queen. To save my city, I had to become the Green Arrow.
Malcolm Merlyn. You have failed this city.
Mr. McGee, don't make me angry. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
My name is Barry Allen, and I am the fastest man alive. I am the Flash.
So, TV news. Game of Thrones had a Season 8 synopsis come out already. Did you guys see this?
Episode 8?
Oh, episode 8. Is that the final episode of the season? Like, why is that a big deal?
No, it was just, it was a very vague synopsis. It reminded people a lot of, like, the Mad Men synopses. Because usually they're a little bit more specific than this one was, but I'm guessing something big happens in it because they are so vague with it.
Hmm, so it's got people thinking maybe some big character is going to get killed or something?
Yeah, something like that.
Alright. Guess that could make sense in a way.
Episode 7, I think, came out this week. I don't know if it was... It might have been 6, I'm not sure. But it was good. I liked it. It was a... it was more of a setup episode, though. Not too much went on. The Arya story moved forward pretty good, though.
Yeah, I agree. It was definitely a setup episode. I wonder what they're going to do with the Hound, because it was cool to see him, that he's still alive. But at the same time, that was kind of vague also. He was just chopping wood, trying to find himself, I guess, with this other group of people. So, the next episode I'm a little bit more excited for. Was Khaleesi? I don't even think Khaleesi was even in this episode.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
Because I almost went back a couple of times because I was like, wait a minute, did I doze off or something? And so, not much. We'll see what happens in the next episode. There wasn't really much to it other than Jon Snow and Sansa getting rejected left and right.
Yeah, getting those 62 soldiers from that one place.
Oh yeah, the 62. I was like, whoa. All right. There's a funny meme that I read earlier that said, if this little girl got the dragons 2 seasons ago, this whole story would have already ended. I thought that was really good. So we'll see what's up. I don't know. It looks like maybe the queen might make a power move next episode based on some of the previews I saw. So that's got me really excited for this upcoming weekend's episode.
Yeah, I'm really interested in the Hound because I heard rumors that he wasn't actually dead because they didn't show him dead in the show. And I feel like he's going to be like, they want to bring him back so he can have revenge on his brother for burning his face all these years later. As Franken Mountain.
Yeah, well, yeah. So we'll see what happens.
And did you guys hear about their cast? Now they're looking to cast for Superman in the Superman's role, or the actor to play him in the for the Supergirl TV show.
Yeah, I heard about this. I think they're doing it wrong if they don't try to get Tom Welling.
Well, the only problem that I see with this is, what if this guy is actually a better Superman than Henry Cavill? Because I know so many people like you guys don't like his version of Superman, mainly because of how he's written.
No, I think Henry Cavill's amazing. He does an amazing job. It's all the writing is what sucks about it.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's what I mean. Like, his writing really sucks. So what if this guy's actually really good? And that brings a bigger problem, because now you have a Flash that everybody loves from the TV show, and you'd have a Superman that people are more drawn to on the TV show. I think that would cause a bigger problem.
Well, I kind of think that even if they do cast him, I mean, I don't think he's going to be seen a lot. It might be like just a voice a lot of times, or you kind of see him in the background. You're not going to, or let's okay, what's the show? Home Improvement. How the next door neighbor was always behind the fence, and you never really knew exactly what he looked like.
Yeah, I remember that.
So I would think they would do it like that. Like, his face would always be blocked off or whatever, at least for a while. You know what I mean? And so for that, because I don't think, I mean, it would be nice if they got Tom Welling, I think, but I think that if they were getting Tom Welling, it would already be a foregone conclusion. You know what I mean? I don't know that would be, okay, let's do a search for who we want to play Superman. You know what I mean? It would just be like, they call up Tom Welling, he'd probably say yes, and that'd be the end of it.
So, yeah, that's true.
I just don't want to pick anybody who's going to overpower Supergirl.
Yeah, well, that's why I'm thinking that at least for for a whole season or 2 seasons or whatever, that he would be in the background. He wouldn't really show up. You know, because honestly, with her, especially with her show moving to CW, they probably have a lot of story ideas and stuff to explore. You know, they came out and basically said look for a 4-night massive crossover that's going to go down at some point this season. So I would think that at least for this season, they probably have more than enough story. They don't necessarily need to go big into having Superman on the show. You know, it might be, like I said, just like a more of a tease kind of thing. See him in the background. But, you know, they need somebody as the voice and, you know, to be like the physical presence. But you're not really going to see him the way you know, he shows up in the movies where you see his face and his, you know, full body and costume, whatever. So, but I mean, at this point, it's all speculation. So,
well, I like the way that they included him in season 1 of Supergirl. It was either a text message, an email, a phone call, or the two times that he does show up, you don't see, well, you see him once at the very end, but it's from very, very, very far.
Yeah, exactly.
You see him fly in, and then he kind of joins the mob.
Yeah,
and but then the other time when what is his name? Why am I not remembering his name?
Jimmy Olsen.
Thank you. Wow. Yeah, when Jimmy Olsen hits the panic button and he comes in and saves them, but you don't see him. I thought that worked fine. I'm watching Supergirl. I'm not I'd be mad if they don't put Superman in there, because he will, no matter what you say, Superman always overshadows Supergirl, because it's Superman. There's really not much to it.
And that's exactly why I think that he'll be, you know, obviously it'll be more of a presence, more of a role than it was in the first season. But I doubt it'll be, especially this season, I doubt if it'll be significant at all.
Real quick, did you guys check out the pictures of J.K. Simmons working out?
No, didn't see that.
Holy cow, that guy is old, but that guy is jacked up to play Commissioner Gordon. Holy cow.
Put him in the bat suit or what?
No, I mean, they have a couple of shots of him in the gym, apparently working out for his role as Commissioner Gordon.
That's what I'm saying, though. Commissioner Gordon, old, wears glasses, smokes a cigar, cigarettes, whatever, pipe.
They say he's even grown that the mustache he's grown is specifically for the role. So I was like, oh, man, like, what is this guy going to do?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. What, are they going to put him in the Bat Bunny suit? Is that why he needs to be
I really hope not. But Zack Snyder would do something stupid like that. I mean, Goyer's going to be like, hey, let's put him in the suit. And he's going to be like, okay.
All right, well, let's move on. Preacher Episode 2, did you get the chance to check it out, Jaden?
Yes, I did. It was actually really good. I really like the way the show's going. It's really weird. It's like nothing else on TV right now. It can really go anywhere, I feel like, from this point. Like, anything can happen on that show. Magic, gore, pretty much. I couldn't really play. Like, I was just watching it with one of my friends who didn't really understand that it was based on a comic, and he thought that it was very out there because of how all over the place this episode was.
What about you, Manny? Did you get a chance to see it?
No, I have not. And every time I want to go sit down and watch it, I have not had the time the last few days, unfortunately.
Yeah, I'm in
gonna try to watch it in the morning if I can. If not, tomorrow. Wait, no, can't do that either. Damn it, I'll find some time the next few days. But I have wanted to watch it because I liked the first episode. And kind of like in comics, where the first issue is always pretty good, the second issue always kind of is where I fill out the book. That's kind of how I feel about this. So I have been very excited to watch the next episode to really get a feel for the show.
I'm pretty sure this one's also free on AMC.com.
What about Gotham Season 2 overall? It recently ended, right?
Yeah, I think it ended a couple weeks ago. I finally caught up on it the past few days.
Thoughts?
I'm mad that Fish Mooney's back.
Yeah, of course you are. You didn't know she was coming back? Jaden, you didn't know she was coming back?
No.
Oh, wow.
I didn't read any news about it or anything. I just watched the episodes. Yeah, I mean, I see what they were trying to do with this season. I remember they said at the end of last season that the star of this season is going to be more the villains than, like, even Jim Gordon, which is kind of what they did. I didn't really like it a ton. It's still entertaining. I'll still keep watching, but it's not the greatest thing ever. I think the beginning of the season was a lot better.
But you're still on board for season 3, huh?
Yeah, I'll keep watching it. Probably not week to week, but I'll still watch it. I think it's entertaining. I like Ben McKenzie as Jim Gordon.
What about you, Manny?
I really hated the ending of the season. It was really, to me, it was really scrambled. I couldn't really get a feel of what they were trying to really accomplish. I mean, the first half of that season with was kind of the Joker tease and them trying to get revenge on the Wayne family. It seemed really solid what they were going. And then the second half, they did a really big tease on Mr. Freeze, and then he showed up for just a few minutes, I feel. Well, yeah, there's a couple episodes that were focused on him, but then it went over to Hugo Strange and his different creations, Edward Nygma, Cobblepot. The season's called Rise of the Villain, so I guess it makes sense. But then the ending with a bunch of characters falling out of the bus or getting released and everything, I don't know. I thought it was really messy, I guess. And I didn't enjoy it as much as I wanted, hoped I would. So I don't know. See, I'm gonna watch it, of course, but it's almost like I feel like I have to watch it. I mean, if there's something else on a Monday night,
I'd probably watch that before Gotham, and I'll catch up on it later. It's not a big deal if I don't watch it that night.
All right. Well, I think, I mean, from what I've heard, a lot of people are echoing the sentiments of Jaden. It started out really good this season, and then it kind of fizzled, so I guess we'll see. Has it? I don't even know, has it even been renewed for season 3 yet? I haven't been paying
attention. Yeah, it has. So.
All right.
Yeah, all the shows for DC have been renewed, and then you have the new one, Powerless, coming out too, so
yeah,
DC's doing really well, TV-wise.
Yeah, that one has Alan Tudyk, so that one I'll probably try to find some time to watch.
Please do note, this is no ordinary comic book. It is in permanent condition. If you spill soda on it, it drops fly off harmlessly onto lesser comics. Yes, you are quite correct to gasp.
All right, on to the reviews for this episode. So let's talk about Action Comics 957 first. Manny, why don't you go first?
I really liked it. I like that we're getting back to the classic Lex-Superman dynamic. And it kind of starts off reintroducing everybody that you already know. If you didn't read some of the things that happened in the Justice League with Lex Luthor being involved, it might seem a little confusing to figure out why Lex is in that suit, or how he's even part of the Justice League. But at the same time, I like the fact that that's the motivation for Clark to get back out and to be Superman. We saw a Rebirth Superman last week where he decided that the world needed a Superman, but I thought it was kind of weird that it was Lex the motivation for him to actually come out in public. I thought it was going to be some sort of disaster or something like that where the world really needed saving for him to come out in public, but I guess the thought of Lex Luthor being the hero wearing the S on his chest was too much for him to handle.
Yeah, I think mostly it was that. It wasn't just that he was in the suit trying to be a hero. It was he was wearing the crest and the cape. And, of course, right away I thought, well, those guys were probably hired by Lex to take hostages or whatever so that he could fly in and save the day. So.
And then probably my favorite page on that issue was that the full page of Doomsday with the green suit on. I thought that was so well done. I just stared at it for a while I was reading it.
Yeah, the other thing that really stuck out to me was, of course, Clark Kent showed back up.
So. Yeah, that was weird. And then when it really raised an eyebrow for me was when even Lois couldn't figure out what the heck was going on. So I was like, oh, okay, so who is this guy? Because you were so I was so concentrated on Lex trying to figure out who this Clark was, or this Superman was, and then all of a sudden this reporter shows up, and I thought it was like, oh, it must be Lois, and then, no, it's Clark. I said, wait, what's going on? So that'll be interesting in the next few issues to figure out who the heck this guy is. And also, who's really pulling the strings behind those gunmen as well as Doomsday.
Yeah, and I don't think we're going to find out who Clark is for a while. I'm sure they're going to drag it out, especially because the next few issues are probably going to be nothing but Lex, Superman, Doomsday battle. Going to be a lot of action, fighting, whatever. But I mean, at least it comes out twice a month, so it won't take as long for us to find out. But yeah, very interested to see. And also, so now are we going to have two Loises? Like, what's going on with that? And, you know, a lot of the world thought Superman was dead. And now, you know, the pre-Flashpoint Superman is going to take on the role of Superman in the New 52 continuity, or, you know, a rebirth going forward. So how's that going to be explained? I don't know. There's a lot of questions to be answered. What are your thoughts, Jaden?
I liked it. I agree with Manny. It did have a very classic, a much more classic feel. But it felt very classic to me. I liked it. It reminded me a lot of like the old-fashioned action comics with the. Now we have two. We have Superman fighting a classic, like a Lex Luthor in a Superman suit. Like, it felt like a comic book more so than they felt more recently. Like, it's not, it was much more, I don't know, more classic. Yeah, I guess that's the perfect word for it.
All right. What about Aquaman Rebirth #1, Jaden? What do you think about that one?
I liked it. It was a lot of these have been very, like, not repetitive, but it's stuff that we've seen before, because it's more so like a renewing of your, like, last time on Aquaman. If you didn't already know about this and this and this, this is also his backstory. I think it's cool. I like that they are making him and Mera's relationship more front and center.
Yeah, I felt like, I think it was Dan Abnett, right, on Aquaman Rebirth as the writer?
Yeah.
Yeah, I felt like, he's really playing up the whole dual roles about how, you know, Aquaman's part of the surface world and he's part of Atlantis, but he really doesn't belong to either. So he's kind of in the middle. So I feel like that's a good place to go to get a lot of drama and conflict and story ideas. But at the same time, trying to keep kind of the heroic feel and powerful feel that Geoff Johns brought to Aquaman with the New 52. I don't think he quite gets there, that heroic feel. I feel like, man, the Geoff Johns, the first 25 issues of the New 52 Aquaman title are for me the best the character's ever been done. I mean, we all know Aquaman has been made fun of. Oh, he talks to fish or whatever. And Johns handled that so well, tongue-in-cheek and acknowledging that kind of perspective that people have on Aquaman and made him feel like such a powerful character. It was really, really awesome. But I like a lot of what Dan Abnett's doing with the establishing of the embassy that Aquaman has built to try to make Atlantis and the surface world try to improve the relations. What I didn't necessarily care for was at the end finding out who the narrator of the whole issue has been. It makes sense. And I love that character, that villain, and obviously it's Aquaman's, you know, arch nemesis, Black Manta. But I don't know that I would have wanted it to be a new character, but I feel like I've seen this before, you know what I mean? Like, if this were a Batman story where a Batman villain was narrating it and it got to the end, it could be any number of Batman villains and it would make sense. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But for Aquaman, there's really only one, because he really only has, like, one arch nemesis. And so it makes sense. And I do like Black Manta, but I'm just, it would have been nice. It just would be nice if Aquaman had a little more variety in his villains. You know, it's like, or if they just would have chosen a different way to go about it instead of seeing Black Manta again. I mean, one of the things I liked about Black Manta, and he was one of the reason he's one of my favorites. First of all, he had a really cool voice in the Challenge of the Super Friends cartoons. Very deep and booming and metallic. But he didn't show up that often, so when he showed up, it was a big deal. But, you know, he was in Geoff Johns' run on Aquaman, and then was it Jeff Parker that followed him in? That also did some Black Manta stuff?
I don't think he did any Black Manta stuff.
Oh, no, he showed up in Forever Evil, that's what it was.
Yes, yeah, that he did.
Yeah, he had a lot of he had a pretty prominent role in Forever Evil. And then after Forever Evil ended, then he was in the new Suicide Squad.
Yep.
So it was just like, I mean, he's one of those cool characters if you don't overuse him. And I worry that he's being overexposed. Because really, his motivation is like, okay, well, I blame Aquaman for the death of my father, so I'm going to ruin his life. It's kind of, especially because we know that that's his perspective, but it's, any logical person would, and obviously the guy's not completely logical, but it's so far-fetched that he blames Aquaman. I mean, it was his dad's own fault or whatever. So it gives him kind of a mustache-twirling feel, and I worry that him showing up and being overexposed kind of it makes that more obvious. But overall, I thought it was well done. The art was really good, but it wasn't the regular series artist, which is going to be Brad Walker. But I did think the art was done well. What were your thoughts on it, Manny?
I really liked the issue. I did feel that a couple of times, especially in the beginning, it felt a little preachy as to, for new readers, and specifically who have misconceptions on Aquaman, they really nailed, hit the hammer on the nail quite a few times, saying he does not talk to fish. Like, that's not all he does. You know, they talk a lot about how a lot of people make fun of him, and they even, I guess, they show some images of him in cartoons on the in the land of what they think of him. But then after they get rid of all of that, I think they did a really good job at really allowing the reader to sympathize with the character and everything that he's dealing with. The fact that he's neither from land nor sea, because when he goes on land, people don't like him because he's from the sea. When he goes back down the sea, because of his father being from the land, they don't respect him as the leader, as the king of the sea. So regardless of where he's at, he's having a hard time being the hero that he wants to be, being the leader that he wants to be. And he does a really good job at setting that up. Then you know what, his life is not easy at all. Just doing regular things for his kingdom or saving people on land, it takes a lot of work because he has to fight on both fronts. And my favorite thing of the issue, and probably my favorite thing about Aquaman, is Mira, his queen, because I've seen Sean Parker did really good at showing her as, you know, behind every man is a great woman, doing that. It's just showing that she has a really, really prominent role in being there for him and allowing him to do what he does and always being by his side. And you get the feeling that without her, he probably doesn't do all the things that he does. And maybe he does still do some of them, but not as well. And in this case, he pretty much just puts it all out there and saying, without Mira, Aquaman can by no means do what he does on sea or on land, or in the sea or on land. And that's something that I've always thought too, that she's really important to him. And I'm glad that they're putting it out there. And then I'm also glad that Black Manta, that's what he's going to go after, because he also realizes the same thing of how important Mira is to Aquaman. And yeah, I started reading Aquaman with the Geoff Johns run. So since then, when Sean Parker took over and then Colin Bunn did what he did, it was okay. I didn't hate it. I didn't love it. But I was ready to move on. So I'm very excited for this series, and this was a good start.
All right, what about Detective Comics 934?
I thought that was kind of cool. I guess they're working on a team-up book. The addition of Clayface was kind of vague. I feel like you're not a bad person, so why don't we give you a shot? And he's kind of in the theater. He's like, oh, okay, I guess. But it is nice to see Batwoman, and I am very excited to see Orphan as well as Spoiler. I kind of want to see how they work together or how their personalities maybe don't click. I know we saw a lot of them in Batman and Robin Eternal. I really like that series, so I am looking forward to seeing all these characters together. Tim Drake as Robin, he's probably one of the few reasons I really enjoyed Teen Titans. I like his character as well.
And I'm kind of interested in seeing who's behind this army. So it was okay. It wasn't the greatest, but it sets up Detective Comics really well. And yeah, there's not much else I can say about it.
What about you, Jaden?
I thought it was interesting. It also has a much more classic feel with that team up thing. And I like the fact that it's not. Detective Comics isn't just basically another Batman title. It's more of a Bat Family title, right now at least.
I thought the moment when Batman decides to reveal his identity to Batwoman was pretty funny. She's like, I was wondering when you're going to get around to doing this, Bruce. So it kind of established that Batwoman, you know, she's pretty smart and capable as well. But yeah, I kind of feel, I mean, I wasn't disappointed in it. I guess it just, because it was a lot of setup, it didn't really reach the level of excitement I was hoping for, because when I heard, you know, Batman Boot Camp, Batman Team Book, I was like super excited, but it was kind of, this issue was kind of light on the action. So for that reason, I guess I was just kind of like, I wanted more. But yeah, like you said, Manny, I'm super interested to see who the villains are, and what that army is all about. Jaden, what about Flash Rebirth number one?
I thought this was cool. It rehashed a lot of stuff that we learned in the DC Rebirth 80 page. But it was good. I didn't really care for the art, though.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, granted, it's going to be hard to follow up the dream team of Brett Booth, Norm Ratman, and Andrew Dahlhaus, but there's been some pretty good artists on Flash up to this point, and I don't know, it just wasn't as clean as I like my Flash, or as dynamic as I like my Flash art to be. So, Jade, how do you feel about his dad being there as kind of a sounding board? Think they're taking that as a cue from the TV show, or...?
It felt a lot like they're taking a lot of cues from the TV show in this. It was, had a lot of similarities to the origin, the specific origin of the Barry Allen TV origin.
What were your thoughts on it, Manny?
Oh, yeah, I agree with you guys. I didn't care too much for the artwork. I thought maybe I was being picky, but I guess not. I liked it, and I can definitely see that they are adding a bunch of little areas here and there from the TV show, and I think that's great because of how popular the character is. I'm pretty sure they want to get as much of that audience as well, because at the end of the day, you got to sell comic books. And looking at this book, I'm pretty sure our next big DC event is gonna spring off of the Flash title and probably the Batman title. So this is definitely one of those that you got to keep a close eye on, because it touches, like you guys said, on the Rebirth issue, things that happened there, and then as well as a couple of things that we saw in the Batcave, like the comedians buying. And I am definitely hooked on this one. I really want to know where this is going to go, and let's not be surprised if sometime in the fall, or maybe in the spring, I don't know how long they're going to drag it on, how long this investigation is going to take. But definitely some good things coming. And then we also got a little look at the next Speedster villain, Godspeed, I think his name was. That's what I remember from the panel. And so It was a good issue. I did also have a little problem with the artwork.
Yeah, I totally agree with you as far as, you know, Jeff Johns has said it's going to take a few years for all the consequences and little Easter eggs and whatnot from the 80-page giant to kind of be answered and talked about and explored in the DC universe and in the stories. But yeah, if you want to know and keep up to date with what's going on with that story, I think Flash is going to be... Just based, I mean, when you think about it, it makes sense. You know, if whoever's been manipulating things, you know, and the Speed Force is kind of outside of time, and, you know, the Flashes, both Barry and Wally, they're always, but with the way the Speed Force works, or whatever, they're always mixed in when it's one of these universe-changing events, going all the way back to Crisis. So it makes a lot of sense. So yeah, if you want to know long term what's going on, I have to keep keep up to date with what's going on in Flash. I will say though, the art did pull me out of the story at times, but this actually had my favorite line of any DC Rebirth title to date, and it was when Barry said that he wanted to laugh, but Superman once told him there was no laughing allowed in the Batcave.
Oh yeah, I got that.
I thought that was hilarious. I was like, oh, that's so good. All right, what about Wonder Woman Rebirth number one, Jaden?
Now, I like Wonder Woman as a character. I kind of feel similarly to Wonder Woman as you do to Superman, Annie. But I don't really, I understand her character, but she just doesn't really interest me that much. Just, she's kind of boring to me. And I think it's mostly because her origin story to me is the least interesting of the origin stories, at least for me personally. So just like kind of rehashing the origin story for her isn't my favorite thing. However, I did enjoy the book. It wasn't badly written or anything. It just kind of, I kind of just wanted to get to her doing, kicking more ass in like the present time and not reminiscing as much.
But I mean, that was kind of the whole point though of it, rehashing the origin, because she has these two distinct origins. Either she was made of clay or she was, you know, born as a live person, you know, she has, and now we've seen both origins and they're both, you know, equally valid, but which one is actually true? So, especially considering that the way the creative team on Wonder Woman has chose to do it is to tell two narratives, I think it's like a super interesting way to go, and a good way to do this issue to kind of set up, there's two stories here, which one is real, which one not. I mean, I do kind of agree with you that there wasn't much action, and you know, it's something we've said about some of the other Rebirth titles. It's a lot of setup, but I guess I just have such faith in the creative team, and you know, that wasn't the team. I mean, there's no Nicola Scott art in this book. There's some Greg Rucka. Greg Rucka wrote it, and there's some Liam Sharp pencils, which were handled very well. So it gives me hope. But the most interesting thing about it wasn't the rehashing of the origin, and it wasn't the art. It was that setup, that question, like, okay, how did this happen? Who did it to her? And how is she going to like fix it? And what is actually the truth about Wonder Woman? At least for me, that's kind of how I felt about it. What about you, Manny?
It's going to be really interesting because, like you guys said, she has two origins, made out of clay or born. But most recently in Justice League, it talked a lot about her origin and her having a twin brother. So I think that's strange that they would even go back to the whole idea of that she was made from clay as we originally thought she was. So it does make for an interesting story, but kind of like Jaden, nothing against Wonder Woman. I just don't find her as interesting because for me, a lot of the heroes that I like, it tends to be, have a lot to do with, besides Aquaman, a lot to do with their rogues and how they kind of parallel or not parallel. They kind of mirror the hero, but in a twisted way or exaggerating qualities in an opposite way. So, I'm not as interested as some of the other titles, but I do think that this book was done well. And telling us and setting us up and them letting us know that, yeah, we know that there are two origins and we're going to explain why, and we're going to fix it and give you a good story at the same time.
Yep, so that's going to do it for this episode. Thanks for joining us, everybody. Visit us at thecomicsourceblog.com for past episodes of the podcast. You can watch episodes of our YouTube channel there, or find links to them and go watch them on Facebook. You can also find Manny's blog there, my blog, and of course our sketch gallery. You can also follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Probably the best place to follow us to keep up to date with when episodes are coming out. Either there or on Facebook. Just do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook or Instagram, and that's us. You can also keep up to date with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter with when we're going to be at conventions and creator interviews and such. So thanks for joining us, everybody, and we'll talk to you next time.